the tide.
When I came here, I don't suppose I was expecting a warm reception. People rolling out the welcome mat. My first thought was the person who I'd be apologising to would be Ian. I suppose I baked some of that apology into my interactions with everyone here. Morgan, even Grace. I tried to get off on the right foot, but it's hard not to see derision in people's eyes. I don't know anyone, and yet they seem to already know that they don't like me. Well, no. I know one person here now. Morgan's nice, if a little single-minded sometimes. A little awkward. I can see why Ian liked him. But as for the others, it's hard not to go into every conversation starting with an apology for who I am.
It's only about 90 seconds walk from the door of the B&B to the door of the Fish and Chippy, where you're headed, first and foremost. It's about 6 or so, maybe a little earlier, because it looks like the shop is just opening up for the evening. As you approach, there is a woman with bright eyes and her hair pulled back, hauling a kind of black metal, like A-board sign out onto the street that says the best fish and chips in the country, with 3 exclamation marks after it.
I mean, the number of exclamation marks, that's like Michelin stars, right?
It is. She spots you, and do you greet her as she comes out, or are you going to wait until you're inside?
I'm going to let her finish her preparations and be at home. And
sure. She takes a moment after putting up the sign to give you a friendly nod before heading back inside behind the counter. You hear the whir of one machine or another starting up back there. It's a little kind of pokey fish and chip place. It's really, you know, there's not much more room than maybe for 4 or 5 people to stand in front of the bar, the counter.
I'll stride on in.
The woman gives you a another nod, and she says, well, evening, love, what can I get you?
Is it too early for the evening service?
Nope, not at all. We might have to wait for the sausage, that's still cooking, but we just had the first fish come out nice and fresh.
Oh, beautiful. Yes. Let's see. I'll have cotton chips, please.
Cotton chips, right you are. Small or large?
Just small, please. Late lunch.
All right. She gets to work.
I staying over at the B&B.
She nods like she already knows that. She just gives this kind of like affirmative, like yep, kind of nod. No surprise registers on her face there. And maybe it's just because she hasn't seen you before. But she says, "Oh yeah, how are you finding Kingside?"
Quite an interesting place. Not been quite the weather for the beach, but.
No, bad timing. It was lovely a couple months ago.
Oh, really?
Oh, Heart of July, always the best. I always say Kingside, you know, if I didn't live here, I would retire here. It's perfect.
So you know Kingside very well then? Have you been here your whole life?
Not quite, but very, very nearly. First job, actually, was here in town. I moved out. I was going to go to university. Didn't quite happen. So I came here instead. Been here ever since.
Oh, right. What were you doing your first job?
I worked on the pier out there.
Oh, very nice.
And served ice creams.
The pier not looking so great nowadays.
No, it's not been safe for a few years now.
That's a shame.
Probably 10, actually, thinking back.
10 years?
Oh, yeah. There was an accident out there.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, but bad business, yeah. Some kids, they were playing.
Oh, no. I'll say no more about that.
Her face sort of, yeah, grows grim, but then immediately snaps into a smile as she hands over your fish and chips.
Listen, I'm looking for a friend of a friend. In town, and
again, she like nods as though that's like not new information, as though she's like, as though you're repeating something you've already talked about.
Fella named Casey, older gent.
Yeah, Mr. Emerson.
Yeah, Casey Emerson.
Oh yes, I know him. Yeah, absolutely. How do you know Casey?
Well, I don't. But my friend did before he passed, and I wanted to if he didn't already know, let him know.
Oh well, my condolences.
Thank you very much.
Yes, I know Mr. Emerson. He comes down every Friday, actually, to get his fish. Other than that, we don't really see him in town very much.
Oh really? Does he live out of town?
Just about. Yeah. She points through the window to the north to the squat white building up there on the cliff with the antennae coming off of it.
Mm.
Yeah, he works at the weather station, lives up there as well.
The weather station?
Yes.
Meteorologist?
Yes, for the Met Office there. It tracks our weather, makes sure everything's... Well, I don't really know what he does. He doesn't talk much about it. Not a very talkative man.
Well, I'll tell you what. If I glean any details... I'll let you know first.
She grins unashamedly and is like, well, that would be lovely. What was your name?
Russell.
Russell. Very nice to meet you, Russell.
Nice to meet you too.
Jeannie.
Russell, absolutely not revealing that he already knows this person's name.
Sure.
This, of course, is being a chance encounter.
Yes. not at all engineered.
No.
Yes, no, he's a... he is an older gentleman, certainly older than even me, if you can imagine. But he apparently walks all the way down from the weather station every single week. Never seen him drive down.
Well, the roads can be a bit treacherous, I suppose.
Yes, I've heard that. Still, good for him, eh? Getting his exercise.
Absolutely, at such an age.
She nods happily. Anything else you want from Jeannie?
Do you know the owners of the cafe at all?
I do, as it happens. Yes. Mr. Walsall owns the cafe now. Thomas, I think he goes by Tommy.
Tommy Walsall?
Yes, him and his son, actually. Well, he owns it. His son works for him.
I noticed they had a to let sign on above the cafe.
Oh, that's for the apartment above. No, that's the landlords of the place. I don't think Mr. Walsall owns the building itself. I think he leases it. But no, they've struggled to sell that for years now.
Yes. Oh, really?
I think there must be mold or something, damp maybe. I've not had a look in myself. She says that in such a way to imply that like. If she thought there was gossip up there, she would scale the building and go and find out for herself.
I like Jeannie. me and Jeannie are of a like mind.
You're kindred spirits.
Yeah, Russell and
in your love for drama.
Yeah, drama and the truth.
Mm-hmm. Well,
it just helps to know who to talk to when asking after things like that, I suppose.
Oh yes, I'm sure they could tell you more about the apartment if anyone could. No, I don't think I know anyone who's lived up there.
Oh, well, it'd been empty for a while then.
I would say so. Yes, well, the landlords are out of towners, developers, you know.
Yeah, it's tough when people who don't understand the area are in charge.
I think you're trying to make an impression on Jeannie with lines like that, aren't you?
Potentially. I want Jeannie, like, as someone who's a notorious gossip.
Yeah.
I'm trying to play a little bit of I've zoned in on her as someone who like is an important person to have on side.
Okay, I think I'm going to require a role then.
Sure.
This is a minor role, but it is a make sort of making an impression kind of role. Only four. Apparently, Jeannie's feeling very friendly today.
Yeah. I'll talk a little bit about in so doing. I'll kind of talk a little bit about my childhood in Whitby and how it was always friends always having to move house because some developer came by and wanted to make a holiday cottage.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be my angle.
Okay, sure. Relating it to your own experience.
Exactly. That is, I've got a hitch. Uh oh.
Hooray!
That puts my effect die at a d4, right? If I only have two dice.
You can't use anything else, yeah.
Well, I can beat it on one dice.
Nah, unfortunately, you have to choose two dice. Would you get a total?
I got 7.
Okay, well, that is a success, but I am going to give you a complication. With just the d4 effect die, you haven't succeeded enough to create a particular asset to represent your bond with Jeannie. Mm-hmm. Here. She thinks positively towards you, but only just. Mm-hmm. It's safe to say. In terms of a complication, I think I'm going to give you exhausted D6 complication.
Okay.
Because it's been a bit of a day, safe to say. Yes. You know, if you think about how this day started with you getting arrested.
Yeah, no, it's true. I'm burning the candle here.
Mm-hmm. Luckily, that's pretty easily remedied. Well, you enjoy the rest of your evening there, love. Come back anytime.
Thanks, Jeannie.
By the time you finish your conversation, a couple of people have begun to line up outside the fish and chippy. Although, nobody you recognise. Nobody you know.
I still take note of the faces.
Sure. There's two younger women who are laughing over a whispered anecdote. As you come out, and then there's a slightly stern-looking older man who is bald and stocky.
Politely nod as I pass and kind of move on, chippy in hand.
Yeah.
Gonna put that under my arm, eat that potentially on the way to my next destination.
What is your next destination? You've sort of reached the end of the working day. This is something to consider.
Yeah. So most places will be closed. Ooh. Losing access to that archive is hurting me bodily.
Yeah.
I want to know what happened 10 years ago at the pier. And just my history sense is tingling.
Yeah.
Well, tomorrow certainly seems like a jaunt up to the weather station.
Okay. Tomorrow will be Friday, it's worth noting. So, in theory...
He'll be coming down.
Casey will be coming down. However, obviously, it depends on how much of a rush you're in.
All right.
But if you're happy, then we can skip forward to the next day, because that will also help you. You can try and recover your exhausted complication.
Yeah, I think I'll probably eat my fish and chips out on the waterfront.
I imagine you there, much like you are in real life right now, sort of scribbling notes in a book.
Yeah, yeah.
Russell kind of organising his thoughts out there.
I've got a long habit of keeping notes for whether it's lesson plans or before that university, keeping notes of what I was reading.
Of course.
Good
handwriting?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Fastidious.
Yeah, it's a fantasy game, Matt. Anything's possible.
I like to think he's got a little moleskin notebook that he sort of writes things down in, dates, times. He's got areas of the page that he puts in things to kind of codify later if he needs to do some shorthand.
Mm-hmm.
So he's got the on the bench, he's got the chips open next to him, reaching down for a chip, scribble a little thing. Every now and again, like, why did I write this down?
Great. So you finish off your fish and chips, head back to the B&B for lack of sort of other very pressing things to do today.
I'm keeping my eyes open. Anyone who's walking past or looking out a window or that sort of thing, I think Russell is a little paranoid.
Sure, I think you do see plenty of people who it seems as though are keeping an eye out. Hard to say that they're directly pointing their gaze at you, but everybody, to some degree or another, seems to be in a watchful mood, I suppose. You don't pass loads of people, but there's a dozen or so that figures that you see on your way back to the B&B. They all kind of fill you with that same air, that sense of paranoia. When you make it back, Grace is not behind the counter. No immediate sign of her.
All right, carry on upstairs.
Before too long, you are fast asleep. You are back here again.
No.
Looking at the wall in the same spot, inspecting it, when you hear the voice of Ian, just like before, calling your name.
Russell?
Ian. Where are you?
You turn around?
I do.
Your room looks almost like you left it, but your things are kind of strewn around a little bit, as though somebody's been rifling through, as though your room is kind of frozen in this moment. Outside, it's dark. It's like before, it's completely starless. Can't even see the sea thanks to the heavy fog that seems to surround you.
Did I hear Ian's voice from a direction?
Same as before, out the door.
I go again. Open the door.
Going downstairs, you can see the basement door is open, but so is the front door as well. It sounds like Ian is calling from downstairs again, from down in that archive there in the basement. But the sense you get is that if you go down there, if you go to him, it will end the same way.
Seawater. I step to the threshold of darkness toward the basement. Just on that threshold where I am kind of embraced by the darkness you described before.
Yeah. Almost suspended in it.
Ian.
Russell.
I love you. I'll see you soon. I pull the basement door to and step out to the front door.
Okay. Out front, you can see the road stretching left to right, and now you're here, you can hear the ocean, just as you could in reality, even if you can't see it, so heavy is the fog that surrounds you on every side. You can also see a couple of guiding lights, lampposts, illuminated, going along the waterfront, but shrouded in the fog. They look kind of like will-o'-the-wisps, glimmering softly against the condensation.
Look toward where the lighthouse would be.
Oh, way, way off. Yeah, to your right as you're kind of looking out there, as you step out onto the street. For a moment, it's impossible to see anything at all. And then sweeping around is this glaring beam that momentarily, only for a split second, sort of catches you in its sights, illuminates the whole area around you, before sweeping away again, leaving you in the darkness. You hear a car behind you, on the street, at full speed, coming towards you.
I'm going to run as fast as if I can react.
Yes.
To where the cafe is. Off the street, onto the pavement, and there's like an instinct, like I could change something.
You run towards the sound of the car, and before you know it, you are completely enveloped into the fog. A bitter chill immediately sort of seeps into your bones, like it's kind of grabbing at you from the inside. I'm going to need you to make some rolls.
Yes.
If you want to try and make it through.
Gonna see this flipping Ford Mondeo.
I've rolled a 13.
What am I trying to do here?
I think vigor should be the attribute, right? You're trying to withstand the elements.
Mm-hmm.
I would also take focus as a potential skill, unless you see anything better.
Focus is fine, I think. And I'll take an afraid d6, as is tradition, to have an adrenaline rush. And add a d6.
You take afraid d6, but yes. You double your skill, is that right?
I double my skill.
You get
my
an extra
skill
d8.
Is a d8. That's better than I thought it was.
Means you'll wake up afraid, but that could be worth it.
Yeah, I might need to have an easy morning. 13.
Yes.
Like, that's so awful. 2 hitches and a 4. Even if I added a hero die, I think I would still be risking dramatic failure.
Yeah, I'm afraid you would. So I think that leaves you with a fail.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm taking away one of your hero dice.
I rolled two ones and two twos.
Brutal. I don't know. I think it makes sense to just step up that afraid you just got. Let's make you really afraid.
Don't like that.
Yeah, I do pay you a plot point for it.
Got lots of those.
You are afraid of D10.
Ooh.
That's going to take some work to resolve. So here's what happens. You go running into the cold without heed for your own well-being. In real life, the distance to the cafe is not far. It's so close, actually, that you could do it without being able to see. You're shrouded completely in fog. You hear a car rev. You hear the sound of something smash, like glass smash, and a scream piercing through the air. And then you feel water at your feet, a tide wash over your ankles. You stop for a moment, frozen. In the fog, a shape of a car whips past you. And the tide comes again, crashing into you from an unknown angle, completely overwhelming you, and you wake up. Your eyes snap open, and your awareness returns to the familiar smell of salt, shivering and cold. It's still dark outside your window, but there's something else, too. A light from the landing. Standing there in your doorway is a figure, a silhouette, pointing a flashlight directly at you in your bed. You can't make out any features with the harsh light glaring from its centre, but the figure looks almost inhuman. Given that you haven't yet moved or sat up, it doesn't seem to have immediately registered that you're awake. It's just standing there in your door. You can hear your own breathing growing heavy. What do? Do you freeze there in place? Do you sit up, confront the thing?
Is there a light switch near to my bed? A lamp?
There is a lamp on your bedside table. You would have to reach out.
I freeze for a second, getting my bearings, completely still, trying to sort of come from the moment of shock of being asleep, suddenly awake, suddenly trying to right myself, understand which way is up, which way everything else is, and I lunge for the lamp.
Let's roll.
A phrase D10, eh?
Hate that.
Oof. I'm sorry, that's a tough break. That is a 17 to beat.
I don't think I can beat that.
Well, with plot points,
maybe, yeah.
You can add third dies and things to your total. True. You're sitting on a bank of plot points there.
I am. I might suggest focus.
Yeah, we don't really have much of a reflexes.
There's move, yeah. But it's...
Oh, you shouldn't have said that, Matt. It's definitely move.
That's a D4 for me.
Yeah, I think it has to be. I'm sorry.
Which gives me 2d8s and a D4, which is not a way I can...
Not a great start.
No. Oh my goodness, my D10 rolled a hitch. So best I've got is 7 with a hitch.
That's bad luck. I did roll very, very well.
I haven't rolled any dice above a 4 there, so it's...
Okay. Well, with a hitch, you might assume that I'm going to make you even more afraid, but I think you're doing a fine job on your own there. So I'm going to give you a different complication. As you lunge for the bedside lamp, trying to make it as swift and as graceful a movement as you can before the thing knows what's happening, I think in your sort of shock, you misjudge the distance slightly. Your hand meets empty air and your head collides with the lampshade, which sends the whole thing off balance. The lamp falls to the ground with a thunk, unilluminated. And I'm going to give you a head wound D6.
Love that.
Take a plot point.
Thanks. I was running out.
And you hear a skittering sound. The flashlight disappears. And when you look up again, seeing stars slightly from the pain of the impact, your open door is empty.
Sort of lay on the ground.
Just toppled out of bed, yeah.
Frustrated. Presumably salt water wet. Is that a recurring feature here?
Soaked through, absolutely.
Great.
Your sheets and your body are completely soaked.
Pull myself up into the fetal position, back against the wall, legs against the bed, side leaning on the bedside table where the lamp's just fallen off, and just take some deep breaths, hugging my legs. like this. I can't keep going like this.
Do you try to get back to sleep?
Yeah, but no, I don't go back to bed. Huddled outside of the covers.
I don't think, even with the amount of time afforded to you by arrest, I don't think you're in any position to attempt to recover from either of your two complications here, because to recover, I think you need to be in a place where you feel safe.
Yeah.
I don't think that applies right now. What's going through Russell's mind there as he tries to drift back to sleep?
Implies on watch, in part, he is hoping for another dream.
There is something special about them. Lucid dreaming is probably not something that Russell's overly familiar with.
It's the closest he gets.
Yes, but these are something even more, because not only are you aware and self-motivated and able to move and aware that it's a dream, but also the things around you, the environment seems to change, showing you real things. You wonder about your possessions, supposedly rifled through in the dream. You wonder about the smashing glass and the scream in the car. And you wonder about Ian and his voice sounding so distant, calling for you. Eventually, sleep comes. A dark, dreamless sleep. And you're there, on the floor, a little bent out of shape, wounded, when you are woken by a hand on your shoulder.
Jerking kind of further into the corner.
Tony, the man who served the breakfast, takes a step back and looks wide-eyed and he says, "Sorry, mate, sorry, didn't mean to make you jump. He points back at the still open door. I was just passing, I saw, are you okay?"
Not a great night's sleep.
Yeah. Is there a problem with your room? Auntie Grace said that there was someone.
He reaches out to the sheets.
Yeah.
Wet still?
Oh, yeah.
Sort of take the corner, you know, like the corner near the head, like the headboard.
Yes.
And just wring it out. Wordlessly look at Tony, kind of wide-eyed a little bit.
He doesn't really know what to make of you. He is clearly kind of put off, and this is kind of inexplicable to him as it is to you, and so he just takes a couple of steps back and, "As long as you're all right, I'll leave you to..." And he just trails away and heads out the door. He's a fairly big man, you know, he's tall and quite broad as well, and seeing him leave the doorway casts your mind back to last night and the figure that was there. The figure was shorter. Definitely. Shorter than Tony.
Tony?
Yeah. He turns back.
Do you stay here?
Yeah, mostly.
Did you hear anything last night?
Hear anything? No, I didn't hear it. Sorry, I was asleep.
Yeah, that makes one of us. Thanks anyway.
He nods, his mouth still sort of slightly agape at the... I mean, you can only imagine the scene that you know, that he's looking at. And he leaves. Where do we find Russell next, after you've had the time to get yourself cleared up?
How far is Morgan's?
Oh, not far. Not far at all. I think... Oh, well, you were driving before, weren't you?
Mm-hmm.
And now you don't have the car, so probably it's about a 45-minute walk. Maybe that's harsh. Maybe 35 minutes.
It's quite a ways.
He's sort of deep in the heart of town there, whereas you're kind of on the edge here by the waterfront.
All right. Is there a shop nearby? Like a convenience, like a corner shop?
Sure, yeah. You look around. It's not directly on the seaside there, but there is just tucked away behind the cafe, actually, sort of on the other side of that same block. It's sort of located right next to the set of stairs that you presume, they're kind of metal stairs that you presume head up to that second floor apartment, or first floor apartment, I should say.
I'll go and see if I can get myself some first aid supplies.
Sure. Absolutely.
Plasters, bandage, bit of... is it broken the skin?
No.
Okay, well, there's only so much I can do.
You can find something to give you a bit of relief. At the very least, some paracetamol. You have a throbbing headache this morning.
Yeah, I'll find some painkillers, for sure. And I think over the transaction, I'll ask where the doctor's surgery is nearby for future, if this is going to keep happening.
The guy says, there's a NHS centre just a couple of minutes that way. A green-roofed building.
Thanks, pal.
Did you take the time to, shower and dry yourself off this morning?
No.
Are you still kind of bedraggled looking?
I might have dried off a little bit.
Sure.
Overnight, but body heat, might have even packed some, towels around me a bit.
Yeah.
No, I put clothes on.
That's about it.
Probably the same underwear from the night before, and just chucked a mixture of the last 2 days' clothes on. And so, yeah, I'm looking pretty bedraggled.
Are you walking to Morgan's?
Yeah. I'm going to the only person who I know in this goddamn place, because I'm in no fit shape to do anything else.
You take the walk, feeling your breathing kind of regulate as best as it can. Feeling the headache start to fade away, though it's not truly clear. You catch sight of yourself in a couple of mirrors and windows on the way, and yeah, you look a mess. Even having dried off, your hair is just sort of slicked to the side of your face. You look like you've just taken a dip in the ocean. You make it to Bryant Drive. It's a familiar house. Do you knock?
Yeah.
It doesn't surprise you to learn that there isn't an immediate response. You know that Morgan doesn't open his door as standard.
I'm going to shout through the letterbox. Morgan, it's me.
There's a voice from inside, echoing.
Russell?
Yeah, just open the door, please.
All right.
After about a minute, he opens the door.
Russell's there, sort of half sat on the front step, rubbing his temples, bleary-eyed, looking up at Morgan.
And Morgan is looking with much the same expression at you, as you realise his hair is slick to the side of his face, his beard is dripping with water that smells of salt, and his clothes are soaked through, and he stares, mouth agape, at what he recognises in you, and he says, "You too?" Thank you for listening. For more information, visit tide.show.